ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to this week's edition of the We Are Podcast on the DK Pittsburgh Sports Podcast Network. He's Corey Geiger. I'm Jared Prugar. Corey, listen, we've talked about the divisions last week. Lo and behold, things are changing there. We've talked about NIL, and we'll get to a little bit more of that on the national scale here later. But I want to talk about Beaver Stadium, because Beaver Stadium is a topic of conversation. In fact, earlier this week, I was talking with a couple of people in the Altoona Kirk press box. A friend of ours, Trey Wilson, is a Virginia Tech guy. And if you remember correctly, Penn State and Virginia Tech were supposed to have a home and home that got canceled because of COVID. Well, two stadiums in Blacksburg and in University Park are probably the most unique and cool atmospheres throughout all of college athletics and college football. So we miss out on two spectacular performances, the Enter Sandman at Virginia Tech and that entrance and what that means, and the Whiteout at Penn State, or I think probably two of the top, if not the top, traditions in college athletics. But Beaver Stadium aesthetically is not pleasing. And you only get that atmosphere for the Whiteout. So what, you know, let's talk Beaver Stadium here, right? What's good and bad about Beaver Stadium as we talk about it today?
Yeah, I think this is an important discussion about the present and future of Penn State football, because Beaver Stadium is an iconic, tremendous venue to host a sporting event with 107,000 people and national recognition, phenomenal atmosphere, the Whiteout. There are a lot of great things about Beaver Stadium. So what we're going to get into throughout this whole podcast is basically what are the pros and cons of Beaver Stadium now? Should Penn State rebuild or remodel Beaver Stadium? Should they just scrap the whole thing and build another stadium? And we'll really get into that in a few minutes. But clearly the pros of Penn State are that when you're in the stadium watching a game, the atmosphere is phenomenal. Now, Jared, you've been to Penn State games as a fan. I've only ever been to Beaver Stadium as a member of the media covering games. Still, be it a crazy Ohio State Whiteout or the Kick Six, Tamba Lee, whatever the case, Michigan, you know, Beaver Stadium is a unique and phenomenal atmosphere. What's your favorite memory and experience inside the stadium as a fan?
Well, I think my first game, it was a Whiteout. Juice Williams was the quarterback at Illinois. I sat in the last row of the stadium right underneath the scoreboard. And that was when Penn State's Blue Sapphire, which is the featured twirler, was now actually a friend of mine, PJ Mayerhofer. She's an Altoona alum. So I thought that was the coolest thing in the world. I was a junior in high school at the time. And so that puts me right about 2007, I believe it was. And it was just an incredible atmosphere, because when they do Zombie Nation, and it was just, this is really about the time where in physics, we had been talking about sound and haptics and vibrations. So we talked about Beaver Stadium, and when you do Zombie Nation and you jump around, the stadium shakes. So I saw it shake in person. And we've been in the press box and we felt it go side to side and sway. And first of all, you think that it's going to collapse, but it doesn't, which is both unique and scary. And your stomach is in your throat, and it's an incredible experience. Sitting down wise, you're on bleachers. Now, I remember Michigan State a couple years later. It was snowy. It's always late in the season when they play Michigan State, it seems. So it was snowy, the wind was swirling, and that was miserable because it was both at our backs, at our fronts, and that stunk. So I'm very thankful that I sit in the press box now. But there isn't, to me, a bad place to watch the game. What isn't fun is sitting on those metal bleachers if you're sitting outside the Nittany Lion Club throughout the game.
Okay, so it is an incredible experience there. What's the experience of going to the bathroom?
Oh, it's all about the trough, man. It's all about the trough.
What's the experience of going to the concession stand?
Well, that's a good question. I haven't been there in a
while. What's the experience of those are tight, tight, tight seats?
Oh, yes, they're very tight.
They cram people. Okay, so the point of this is there's no question that you see it on TV, phenomenal atmosphere. Certainly the wideout is great. The student section is great. There are sensational things about Beaver Stadium, and especially with the history. You ever worry about your safety at Beaver Stadium, Jared?
No, I wasn't.
You've never worried about a decades old stadium that is very creaky underneath. And you ever thought, man, there's 100,000 people in here. God forbid anything ever bad happens structurally.
No, I don't think I've ever been in fear of that, because I just don't think of that. I mean, when I'm at the game, I'm kind of focused on the game. Now, sure. I will say, when there are court or field rushes, that's when I feel like I'm at my most vulnerable. Just because you're just supremely outnumbered, right? It happened in the slowest field rush at Ohio State this year. But when they beat Ohio State in years past at Beaver Stadium, that's when it gets kind of worrisome. But I don't ever think of that, because, I mean, to me, more often than not, I know that those stadiums are pretty trusted. I know that there's some optically not the greatest situations, but again, Penn State, I trust the people that are in charge there, that they, if there's something structurally deficient, then they would have caught it and it wouldn't be an issue.
Okay. So what we're going to talk about in the second segment is whether or not Jared is right and how much money it's going to take to make sure that what Jared said is correct. And this will be something that will offend people, and I'm sure this will be something that people will say, well, there goes Geiger hating on Penn State. I'm not. Penn State, Beaver Stadium, in a lot of ways, is a dump. It's not a great stadium in a lot of ways. The atmosphere is phenomenal. All you fans are phenomenal. What they pull off there with 107,000 people is phenomenal. Getting all the national recognition is phenomenal. Are you comfortable there? Do you feel safe? What's it like going to the bathroom? How about for handicapped people? Do they have reasonable access? What happens if there, this came up in a discussion with somebody there, what happens if there's a lightning storm and people have to get out of there? How difficult is that? Brutally difficult. So look, there's no question that Beaver Stadium, when everything is going well and everything's fine, is a tremendous, tremendous example of what college football is, and certainly a representation of the Penn State fan base. But as a facility, as a venue, I think it's ugly from the outside. It's gorgeous on the inside. It's a giant erector set. When they came up with the facilities master plan a number of years ago, they came up with gorgeous reconstruction pictures and possibilities with a light brown brick skin around it, would make the stadium look gorgeous. But again, we're going to focus on all of this a lot more in the second segment. But for everything that you say that's great about Beaver Stadium, I'll come back and ask you a question of, well, I think there are these problems, and they're going to have to be fixed.
Yeah, I think that's a very good point. So when we come back from this quick break, we'll talk more about what they should do at Beaver Stadium, and whether they should just tear the whole thing down, on the We Are podcast and the K Pittsburgh Sports Podcasting Network. Welcome back to the We Are Podcast on the UK Pittsburgh Sports Podcasting Network. He's Geiger. I'm Prugar. Corey, tear down, rebuild, revamp. Those are all options. They're all costly. It's going to cost an arm and a leg and maybe your 2 feet and from some fingers and toes and everything in between, right? So you mentioned the erector set, right? Because Beaver Stadium in its existence was when it first – was it Beaver Field and then came to Beaver Stadium. It was much different. It had a track for track and field. And you can see the original bowl, which I think is a unique part of it. It's much like Michigan Stadium, where you can see the original facade. And then they built out around it and up. So I think that's unique. And then you see where they just put the steel and the aluminum and everything on top of where things were. And then, you know, the last end zone, the Mount Nittany side, finally going up, that's the most modernized section of the stadium. Clearly, it houses the media work facilities, the Nittany Lion Club, the recruiting lounge, Penn State's locker rooms, and the museum. So that's all the new stuff, the unique stuff, right? Everywhere else is much different. Obviously, you have the suite level, which isn't bad at all by any means. But looking up at it, you know, you can see the segments that they built the stadium in, which is both unique and kind of concerning at the same time.
Well, and look, nobody cares about where the media sits, but the press box, really, for that level of a stadium is embarrassing. I don't necessarily always feel particularly safe in there, and they've done work there as well. So what we're going to get to here is the cost. There's no easy answer here, okay? I have heard people speculate this number. The number seems reasonable to me, that if they are going to renovate Beaver Stadium with everything that it would take to modernize the facility from a structural standpoint, safety standpoint, the bleacher stuff, accommodate fans better, accommodate handicapped people better, Jared, you're talking $500 million. And I think that number is
that's a low ball. That's realistic, a low ball estimate.
And it might be low. Okay. So if you're talking $500 million to renovate the stadium, then you have to start asking yourself, how much would a new stadium cost? So I'm going back here. In March, Penn State sent out a questionnaire, a football survey to some football fans. Not everybody got this, but some fans got it. Here's one question that was part of that survey. Okay, here it goes. If the cost of a renovation to Beaver Stadium is similar to the cost of a new stadium, and the new stadium offered an improved overall experience as well as a longer life than a renovation, would you support the development of a new stadium? My God, that's a terrible survey question that you're just going to send out to people. It's way overworded. Yes. From a PR standpoint. But basically they're saying, if the costs were similar, would you be okay if we built a new stadium and did away with our iconic stadium? And that's really where we are here, Jared, because again, say it's $500 million to renovate a 100,000 seat stadium today. The cost of equipment, I mean, you'd think you could get it for $1 billion, but could you? I mean, I don't know if that number is even feasible. It might be $1.5 billion. And so I don't know what the line of demarcation would be, Jared, about if the renovation is $674 million versus the new stadium is $1.3 billion. I mean, there will come a point where the renovation number is so high that really, hey, Jared, if you have a car and your car is worth $8,000 and you got to spend $6,000 to fix something, mm-hmm. You're not going to do it. You're going to go get a new car.
Yeah. And that's a tough spot to be in because, yeah, clearly it needs renovations from the surface level, right? The field level is fine, whatever. But the stadium itself, the infrastructure is for the most part okay. But yeah, I mean, you got to figure out what you're going to do financially, because listen, they're not out of the woods financially yet from the pandemic, and Penn State is struggling. It's not one of those situations where it's like, oh well, shit, you know, they have this influx of money. They still have to pay for the last renovations and other facility upgrades throughout campus, but it's just one of those situations where what's your priority here? Because if you look at it, if I'm going to build a new Beaver Stadium, right? My goal is I'm trying to and that's the tough thing too. You have to recreate what makes the old Beaver Stadium special, or completely get away from it, which is what your brand is. Beaver mm-hmm. Stadium is Penn State's brand. Mm-hmm. The whiteout, the atmosphere, the Zombie Nation, Sweet
the
Caroline.
Size.
The size. Right. That's a lofty, lofty project. So are you better off renovating and patching things together and piecemealing things, or is it just one of those situations where you just, there's plenty of space. By no means, I don't think that that Penn State is out of space up there, because it's all farmland, it's all grass area. They have places they can build a new Beaver Stadium.
But let me say this though, okay? It's got to be on campus.
Oh yes.
Because for what you just said, a huge part of what makes Beaver Stadium great is it's there on campus. So you can't, I don't think you can build it across, you know, a mile down the road. If it's going past the, the highway and everything like that, because then you'd create problems of getting students there. You know, you create some parking problems, some automobile types of problems, those kinds of things. You got all the fans that do the RVs, and that's a big part. So that is interesting, because I think a huge part of everything that you just said is the location. If they could find a spot, and I've heard some theories about maybe they move a certain athletic field nearby or what have you, do some other things, maybe they could do that. But paramount is it's got to stay really close to the current location.
Right. We see all the horror stories from schools that aren't on campus, and Penn State's not an overly difficult campus to travel, though a lot of kids don't have their cars. And, you know, if I'm moving a field, it's probably the soccer fields and some of those paved parking lots where they could just build it right next door. But again, what's difficult for me, and in my opinion is, and I know that we're probably not getting to this point yet, but I would renovate. I wouldn't rebuild. And the reason why is because it's your brand. It's as much as it would be, it's not going to ever have the same lore if you were to rebuild. You can make new memories, sure, but you can't take away the atmospheres, the experiences. But the base of the stadium, the ground level needs updated. Now, if you remember one of the games where we had to walk down the catwalk from the press box to the ground floor because it was the elevators were broken, that was an experience. That stadium might not look like it's high up off the ground, but for somebody that's scared of heights, it's super high. So my recommendation obviously is renovating the press box, renovating the stuff that needs done. And right now the facilities plan is that is the case. But my thing is I can't take away that experience, because if I try to do something new, you're never going to replicate it. It's not going to be the same. And that's the $500 million question. What do you do? My opinion is to renovate, because really it's just never going to be the same if you don't.
My suggestion is to tear it down and rebuild, because it is going to cost you an arm and a leg to keep putting Band-Aids and patches on problems instead of just ripping off the Band-Aid and starting over. Now, I can understand where you, who grew up as a Penn State fan, and maybe anybody who's listening that grew up as a Penn State fan, you want to cherish that. You want to cherish those memories. First and foremost, no matter what they do, they've still got to have 102, 105,000 people. That's the biggest thing. They need those seats because they need the money. But here's the thing, Jared. This is not a singular, isolated discussion. This is a discussion about Penn State's place in the world of college football. And there are a lot of issues with Penn State financially in trying to keep up in the arms race with everybody else. So let's say you do look, I do think what's going to happen is what you're talking about. They're going to keep putting Band-Aids, and they're going to spend $100 million here and $125 there and $80 million here, $60 million there, and they're going to kick the can down the road. Instead of biting the bullet and spending $1.2 billion, they're going to kick the can down the road as long as they possibly can and milk this out for decade after decade instead of just biting the bullet. But what that's going to do is, over time, they're going to spend way more money, if you follow what I'm saying,
right,
than if they just fix the problem. It's the whole thing of, look, I will fully admit this. I stop at the grocery store every day. I have a wife and two kids. We should go grocery shopping for 2 to 3 weeks worth of food. Every economist in the world will tell you, you will save a tremendous amount of money by planning ahead, going out and getting your one gigantic order at the grocery store, as opposed to going and spending $12 a day for this meal, $14 the next day. So we go day by day. It's the worst way you can do it. But that's how I like to do it. And my comparison is, I think that's what Penn State's going to do. They're going to shop at the grocery store every day and kick the big can down the road instead of going out and getting their bulk order of a $1.2 billion stadium. They're going to end up spending way more money over the course of a 30, 40, 50 year period. And quite frankly, I think the number, hell, they could end up spending 30, 40, 50% more money if they just keep patching Band-Aids.
Right. And I mean, there's only so much you can do, but there aren't very many college stadiums being built. Now it's different in professional football and all that fun stuff, but there isn't a right or wrong answer. Because listen, as much as I would love to have $500 million in the bank or whatever, that would be great. And I really probably wouldn't be on this podcast if that was the case, but there's just, you're kind of stuck between a rock and a hard place.
Yeah.
Because piecing it together is going to be the cheaper option in the short term, but over the long term, are those options that you do, that you patch up, are they going to be sustainable for years to come? And who's to say there's not going to be issues with a new stadium? Mm-hmm. Penn State's not in the greatest of climates in the winter. You know, it's wet. It's snowy. It's cold. It's
well, Jared, that's another component is winterizing Beaver Stadium. From everything I've ever heard, is a massive ordeal and very costly.
Do you remember when the pipes froze for the Michigan State game on Thanksgiving week, the one year, that was entertaining. But yeah, I mean, and that's every stadium, it seems. I mean, and even Beaver Stadium is not young, it's old. And it's just one of those situations where, hey, what's going to be the best option moving forward for Penn State? And, you know, the arms race, what's going to generate more revenue for them? A brand new stadium or an old stadium based on tradition that people love going to, right? Happy Valley, it turns into what, the third largest city in the state on Saturdays during the fall. So that's, you know, that's a situation too, because what's going to create the most revenue streams coming in?
In year 5, in year 10, right. In year 15, it's renovating Beaver Stadium.
Right.
In year 50, it's rebuilding Beaver Stadium. That's what we're talking about here. Are we going to fix the problem right now? And look, homeowners across this country face this exact same situation. If you own a house and something bad happens to your house and you have to start playing with the numbers, playing with the math, how much do I spend on this roof and this furnace and this, you know, water heater? It's not a hot water heater, by the way. That's one of my pet peeves. It's not a hot water heater because the water's already hot if you're heating it. So it's a water heater. Just throw that out there as a pet peeve. But the point is, if you're a homeowner, you face these situations. You face these discussions, just like if you own a car. How do I get by and spend as little money maybe as I can now versus the long haul? And that I do honestly believe that over the long haul, they would save probably a really significant, I mean, hundreds of millions if they would build it, but it would be a pain in the ass for the short term. And in life, most people don't like to have to deal with the pain in the ass for the short term.
And let's be real. Nobody likes change, right? Change is not fun. But again, the good news is, Corey, we get to sit here and debate about it while we don't have to make that decision. And
Sandy Barber is retiring. You got a new AD in Patrick Kraft. He's going to be part of making that decision. And that's where I think things get really, really intriguing, Jared, because Sandy oversaw the fundraising and the facilities master plan for the last 5 years. And basically, the big things didn't get done. They've gotten some things done, and I'll give them credit. Now they've handed the ball off to Patrick Kraft. And it's going to be up to him and a lot of the ideas that he's bringing in this is where these discussions, because quite frankly, I was at the press conference 5 years ago when they introduced the facilities master plan, and they've done very little along the way, and they're still sending out surveys and all this stuff here 5 years later. Some of that's maybe because of COVID, but I'm just sitting here wondering when the hell they're going to get to any of this stuff.
Yeah, and I think that's the other thing too. You mentioned COVID. I mentioned it before too. They're not out of the woods economically from that. The whole landscape of the college atmosphere and the college lifestyle has changed, right? How easy for it is to go virtually now. So that's a factor too, because in all honesty, college is right now a business. It's big business. Let's be real. And, you know, moving forward, is that landscape going to be different? Because now there's a focus on trade schools. What's that going to do to enrollment? I know at Penn State Altoona, which is our local branch campus, they had to cut programs. So, and that's a 2-year school where they can go up to Penn State Maine in University Park after 2 years, or they can stay there for 4 years. So it's just going to be interesting to see how this kind of works itself out, because we are years away from this settling itself out here. As far as the college atmosphere and college experience goes,
man, I could go on for an hour about this. I love that you mentioned that. I do think everything you said is very important with regards to what our college is going to be like 10, 15, 20 years from now. What's the budget going to be like? We could do a podcast called the We Are Not Going to Hey, look, I think college is a gigantic fraud, and we can do another talk or segment on that at some point. But I'm telling you, man, when you've got to spend $100,000, $150,000 to go get a job that you've got to pay your college education back for 30, 40 years, and in a lot of ways, handcuff and cripple your family for 20, 30, 40 years. College, I grew up saying, of course I'm going to go to college. Of course my kids are going to go to college. Right now, I think college is a fraud. I absolutely do. I think college is in business to be in business. I don't think higher education is the primary goal of colleges. I think colleges, their primary goal is to be. But anyway, that's a rant. We can maybe get into that some other time. But I'm glad you brought it up, because it is important if Penn State is trying to figure out what its budget's going to be like in 30 to 50 years. Well, how much of that will depend on if enrollment starts to drop in a lot of cases.
Well, on the same token, what's college football going to be like in 5, 10, 15 years? What's going to be the most sustainable moving forward? And that's an option. That's what Penn State has to figure out. And it's not an easy, fix. It's not an overnight fix, but again, we don't have to do it. And you know what, while we're on the talk of big money, let's talk about that here in the third segment when we come back from the We Are podcast on the Pittsburgh or DK Pittsburgh Sports Podcasting Network. Welcome back to the third and final segment of the We Are podcast and DK Pittsburgh Sports Podcasting Network.
Hey, Jared, you're not God.
That's not the first time I've heard that, Corey.
You're not God. What makes you think you're God, like Nick Saban, like Jimbo Fisher said? That was hilarious, man.
I love studying coaches. As a coach myself, I have so many different books by different coaches, from John Wooden to Nick Saban to Mike Leach to Bob Stoops, to everybody in between, Dean Smith. I love Mike Leach. I would kill to cover Mike Leach, coach with him, whatever, because I don't think we'd ever talk about football. And I think that's the coolest thing. But man, this little turf war is what's so great about this shit show that is college football right now, because it is nuts. It is the wild, wild west. From the transfer portal to NIL, people are buying their players. It is insanity, and I'm here for it because it gives us something to talk about in the middle of the season.
You know, what I'm not here for is coach speak and coaches just giving their standard answers and avoiding anything. You mentioned Mike Leach. He's a quote machine. Here's the quote from Jimbo Fisher about Nick Saban. Some people think they're God. Go dig into how God did his deal. You may find out a lot of things you don't want to know. We build him up to be the czar of football, go dig into his past or anybody that's ever coached with him. You can find out anything you want to find out, what he does and how he does it. It's despicable. I love it. That's great because I think we have some honesty there. Now, look, I do think Nick Saban is the greatest college football coach of all time, and what he's pulled off in this era is amazing. And, you know, Jimbo Fisher used to be an assistant coach of his. And do I also think that Texas A&M bought these some of these recruits?
100%.
Absolutely. 100%. Absolutely. So I think Jimbo
Fisher. Why wouldn't they? Right? Why wouldn't they?
Right. I think he's full of a lot of crap, too. So what you have here is – I'll borrow your phrase from earlier. You got a giant shit show, man. What you have is Nick Saban, who's been on top for a long time, and now the playing field is getting a little bit more level than he's comfortable with, and Dabo Sweeney's done this too. So what do they start doing? They start crying and whining. They don't want to see change. Who doesn't want to see change, Jared? The people who are the most successful don't want to see change.
Right, because they mastered what they've done.
Correct. It threatens their ability to continue to be successful. So do I believe what Nick Saban said about Texas A&M? Yeah. But do I also believe that what Jimbo Fisher said about Nick Saban, that he's probably a pretty slimy dude in his own right? Absolutely. I believe that.
Oh my God. Yeah. You have to be in all honesty. I mean, you are trying to get the best athletes to come to your school to play for you so that you can make them millions of dollars while you sit there and make millions of dollars yourself. It's a dog eat dog world out there, right? I mentioned the Wild Wild West because I was talking about this earlier this week, and it's insane because there are no regulations. It's a free for all. And I really wish I was athletic enough to get this kind of money, but again, here we are. So I have to keep doing this podcast, but it's not going to fix itself. I know we talked about this on your radio show on Sports Central. And it's tough because you have to do what's best for your program. And that could also turn you off on some guys too. Because now with all the money at stake, how many of these guys are just going to sit there, play a year, sit out, and then go train and go to the combine? Because they already got their money, right? It's just, again, we talk about things not settling down. This is going to ruffle college football for years to come. And I don't know that it's ever going to truly recover. And I don't know if it's necessarily a good or a bad thing yet either.
Well, it's definitely a bad thing because everybody's going to be breaking rules now, because what are the rules?
They broke them even before.
Sure. They've been breaking them for a long time, but now, and I keep saying this, I wrote about it a while back, the double-edged sword of the transfer portal and NIL both coming into play at the same time. I will say this. Let me share this real quick, Jared. I was talking about this on my radio show last week about, all right, so here's the rules for NIL, all right? Here's my analogy. Say you're on a highway that's 2,000 miles long, Jared, 2,000 miles, okay? You know that there's one cop policing that highway. Mm-hmm. You gonna go to the speed limit ever? There's 2,000 miles of highway. There's one cop. You know you're never going to get caught. The speed limit's 65. You're going to go 82? You're going to go 89? You're going to go 96? God forbid you go 125. And what I'm saying is, even if there's a rule, if you know there's no one that's there to catch you, these rules are useless. And that's where we are mm-hmm. with the NCAA and the oversight and the policing of these rules. There are supposed to be rules in place about tampering, supposed to be rules in place about pay for play. You're not supposed to be able to just point blank say, I'm going to give you a couple million bucks if you come play for me. That's not supposed to be how it works, but there's no policing it. And I'll go a step further. I was having this discussion with our buddy, Chris Carter, formerly here of DK Pittsburgh Sports. We were just talking about this on my radio show, and he expanded on my analogy, Jared. He said, not only are you on that 2,000 mile highway and there's only one cop, that cop doesn't even have a radar detector.
Nor does the cop care, probably.
Well, that's a good point. But he doesn't have a radar. So yeah. Even if he pulls you over and says, you were going 103, you can say, where's your proof? You don't have any proof. And the cop would – that was Chris Carter's addition to my – but that's the whole point about all these rules with NIL and money and everything involved now is – whatever rules there are, there's no one there to police them. There's no way to prove it. And so, hey, I'm just throwing my hands up and saying this chaos, I just don't know how we're going to get out of it.
Yeah, I don't see an end in sight because it's gotten too big, too fast, just like we talked about last week on the podcast. There's no end in sight, and it is a runaway freight train, and buckle up because it's going to be a wild ride.
And yeah, all this happened with Saban and Jimbo Fisher on the same week that Jordan Addison finally announces he's transferring from Pitt to USC. So there you go. There's the poster boy. He will be the poster boy for how NIL really, really went awry very quickly.
Right. And hey, when you have those resources, hey, if you can afford a $100,000 truck and it's not going to put a dent in your bank account to afford a $100 truck or $100,000 truck, you're going to do it. And if you can afford that $3.2 million house and you can afford it and it's not going to financially restrict you, you're going to do it. And if you can go out and get the Biletnikoff Award winner, you're going to do it just like you would do it in the NFL and go out and get that high-priced free agent. And, hey, buckle up. It's going to be a wild one.
And you know what, Jared? If there are Penn State fans listening to this, because this is the We Are podcast, and they're saying, bleep on Pitt, as a lot of Penn State fans like to say, wait till it happens to Penn State. You can rip Pitt or Jordan Addison or anybody else, and you can make fun of them. Wait till it happens to Penn State, because it will. It absolutely will. There will be a Penn State player or recruit or what have you that gets more money from somewhere else, and he will leave, and then Penn State fans will see what it's all about. It's going to happen to most major programs. It may not happen to A&M or Alabama or these schools that can afford the most money, but as we're talking about all this money Penn State needs for renovations to the stadium and everything, Penn State needs a lot of money for a lot of things, including keeping up in the arms race with NIL.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see where Penn State shakes out because, again, I was talking again with our friend Trey Wilson, because Penn State and Virginia Tech are kind of in the same spot as far as it's not the crazy South. There's not a lot of donor base there. Penn State has a far bigger donor base than Virginia Tech does. But, I mean, the money that's going to be pouring in for this and around the country is going to be wild. And, I mean, Texas A&M's got those they got the oil money, right? Penn State's got what? Farming? Right? Farming, ice cream. Maybe the creamery can sponsor some guys. Hopefully they're not lactose intolerant. But, you know, I don't know how they're going to be able to keep up. I just don't. I mean, hopefully guys like maybe Saquon or Chris Godwin or big name guys like that could step up. Maybe if John Harar makes it with the Eagles, he could step up. I don't know. And it's going to be interesting to see how this all shakes out, because there are going to be teams and big time programs that get left in the dust because they just can't financially keep up. And that's going to be the reality of the situation, good, bad, or indifferent. And I think that's right where we're heading. Whether that happens at Penn State, I don't know that that's going to happen, but at the same time, it's definitely, definitely possible.
Jared, I want to close our awesome podcast here. I'm going to drop some knowledge on some people based on what you just said about being lactose intolerant. This has nothing to do with football, but I'm going to ask you, and everybody think to yourself, what percentage of the people are lactose intolerant? What do you think, Jared? What percentage of people are lactose intolerant?
I feel like 40%.
This came up in a trivia question we had when my family was in Orlando a couple months ago, and we were all sitting down there, and we're like, I don't know that many people that are lactose intolerant. It's got to be like 8, 10, 12%. I don't know. I mean, I literally don't know of hardly anyone that I know of that's lactose intolerant. Do you?
I know a few people, actually.
A few? Out of how many people that you know? 100? Oh,
yeah, something like that.
You know what percentage of people are lactose intolerant?
What's that?
65%. Can you believe that? That two-thirds of the people you meet, I couldn't believe it. They gave the answer at this trivia contest we were playing in Orlando, and I'm like, come on, that's ridiculous. Looked it up. Two-thirds of the people you meet have some form of lactose intolerance. So,
What's bigger there is how many people don't realize they're lactose intolerant.
That very well could be true, but and look, maybe it's a slight form. You can't deal with certain. Anyway, that has nothing to do with Penn State football. But I didn't want to miss an opportunity since you said lactose intolerant. I didn't want to miss that chance to drop that awesome knowledge on people. Because if you're out there guessing 65%, then that's incredible. I'd have never thought that number.
Probably work in some dietary field. But lactose intolerant aside, lactose intolerant awareness. For Corey Geiger, I'm Jared Prugar. Thank you, as always, for listening to the We Are Podcast, the DK Pittsburgh Sports Podcasting Network. We'll talk to you again next week.
Got milk?